It's getting better slowly, but for many years, agriculture was seen as the sort of toxic issue. And that is changing dramatically, fortunately. I think it was a bit of the toxic issue, and I'm saying that in inverted commas, at the time prior to Copenhagen, where basically countries were afraid that a top-down legal instrument would interfere with their agricultural policies. But since we are now based on INDCs, the intended national determined contributions, it's back in the hands of member states. And it's quite encouraging to see that now in the about 150 INDCs we've seen so far, agriculture does play a prominent role. So I do see that the space we are getting in the negotiations is becoming bigger.
Can you give me an idea of the types of pressures climate change is putting on agriculture?
Well, most of the world's agriculture actually is rain-fed. When you think about climate change impacts, you think about tropical storms, extended droughts, hail, all sort of extreme weather events. And that's certainly true. More temperature means more energy in the system, and more energy in the system results in more violent, extreme weather events. That one is clear. But what few people do understand is that in order for a specific crop to grow and the yield to be what farmers expect, you actually need a corridor over a certain period of time of specific climatic conditions. And we are leaving this corridor. And it's simple things like, you know, changing rainfall patterns that makes it impossible for farmers to work on the basis of traditional knowledge. What you learned from your mother or your father is just not valid anymore. Or we just understand that nighttime temperatures do play a crucial role. That's what I would call a silent crisis of agriculture, which you see in reduced yields, but you also see it in reduced nutritional value of your harvest. And that is already happening today.
How do these pressures on natural resources connect to other geopolitical and economic developments?
Well, I think the questions of poverty, development, and climate change are intrinsically linked. If you take a map of today's live conflicts and you take another map of extremely water-stressed countries, countries under stress for food production, there is an enormous overlap here. I don't want to oversimplify things. It's not that this is causing directly conflict. But if you think of an area like Lake Chad, where we are losing basically a lake, where entire water systems, ecosystems do collapse, it's quite obvious that this has an impact on people. You have about 75% of the poorest of the poor living in rural areas being directly dependent on agriculture. And I think we are crossing everyday human tipping points where it just becomes impossible for people to really stay on that piece of land. So what are they supposed to do?
What's the connection between climate change, energy, and land tenure in the context of building sustainable agriculture?
Let me start with land tenure. Land tenure is one of the things where FAO has been working very successfully over many years. And indeed, it's the basis, I would even say, of human activity. How are you supposed to work on a piece of land if you don't know who has the rights to work on this land? Who has the rights to have the harvest? If you plant a tree, it makes a world of a difference whether it's your tree or somebody else's tree. So adaptation starts really with land tenure. And let me emphasize particularly on the aspect of women in agriculture, because still in many countries of the world, women don't have the right to tenure, and yet they are bearing the brunt of the agricultural production. And that is increasingly so with migration kicking in even more strongly. It's mainly young men who migrate, leaving more women behind, and we need to address particularly women in the tenure questions.
In terms of agriculture and food security issues, what do you hope will come from COP21?
First of all, I hope there is a solid result in COP21. We are at a really interesting time. The community of states just agreed on the Sustainable Development Goals. And you know, they are very detailed. There are 17 SDGs, 169 indicators. But for me, the exciting thing about the SDGs as compared to the Millennium Development Goals from 2000 is actually that every country of the world takes on responsibility. So that means even if you are rich industrialized countries, the SDGs oblige you to more sustainable working. And I very much hope that in Paris we see the same spirit, that yes, of course, there is a question of historic responsibility, and yes, there is a need of climate finance to be lifted up by OECD countries. But I hope that out of Paris comes the understanding that this is our common problem. And even if you have a little bit to contribute, you should contribute, and you should invest time and energy and all of the government's activity into addressing climate change.